That jarring cacophony tells you that you're live with the power of three. Well, when I say live, we're recording live on location, but not in Queen's Park in Glasgow. I'm Kenny Smith.
And I'm David Steele. Welcome back. Thank you for joining us. We're coming to you from the park benches and the nice pleasant surrounds of Allendale beside Allendale Village Hall, because Kenny and I are done here for the day. It is Saturday the 20th of April and we're down for the day to attend the Monster Men convention.
We are indeed. And we've driven down. It was a couple of hours drive.
Didn't take us as long as it took us to get to Novel Experiences. That's the Novel Experiences mentioned out the way. Very pleasant day for it. Took some lovely photos, so you can see them on my Instagram or maybe on Twitter if you're lucky. Yeah, and this is a convention primarily organised because there's a new Mythmakers production entitled The Monster Man coming out or being made available very soon, if not already. And they have a few other Doctor Who related guests. So Kenny and I had such a good time at Novel Experiences last year that I was like, shall we do this? And Kenny was like, yeah. I was like, right then. So we have.
Yeah, the fact it's so close to us in Scotland, it was a nice easy drive, as said, and through the countryside. And it's amazing that it's like, if you watch Emmerdale or All Creatures Great and Small, it was like driving through that kind of countryside to get here, past little sheep with their little lambs in the fields, watching babbling brooks.
You're turning into Vic Reeves. Yeah, it was... But you know, let's not talk too much more about the journey, because we don't want to be one of those Doctor Who fanzine articles that spends an entire page on the journey to the place before they talk to someone. So some of the guests that are here, just to give you context, listeners, TV writers Glenn McCoy and Stephen Gallagher. So I got my book signed from them, which is lovely. And Mike Tucker got a book signed from him. And other couple of special effects guys like Robert Alsop and Stephen Mansfield. Had a great chat with Stephen Mansfield. As a McCoy fan, it was great to talk to him face to face. And a few other people around as well. And we're hopefully now going to try and talk to some of them.
We are indeed. Of course, this DVD that they're promoting is called The Monster Man, as they've just mentioned. I have a copy of it here. And it's getting its premiere this afternoon. So, what is The Monster Man all about?
I think you should read out the back cover blurb, Kenny. That'll tell everyone exactly what they want to know.
There are many talented designers in the world, creating the diverse and incredible range of alien creatures and monsters we see in top films and television series. But there are few experts, very few, who are dedicated to preserving them after their screen use. Tragically, many famous monsters have been treated poorly by museums and broadcasters, degraded and rotting. They've been lost forever. A lifelong fan, Neil Cole, has made it his mission to save everything possible, and he created the Museum of Classic Sci-Fi to achieve this. In this monstrous documentary, we trace Neil's story from the beginning and learn about the restoration and preservation techniques he has pioneered to save classic monsters for generations to come. A unique man, a unique vision, a unique story. The Monster Man is here.
Yes, the museum's marvellous, listeners. We went to have a look at it before the event started, and a real surprising range of props and costumes, stuff from some of the Marvel movies, stuff from the Tim Burton Planet of the Apes, can you believe it? But lots of amazing Doctor Who stuff, like Urak's head from Time of the Rani and one of the plasmatons from Time Flight. Toosie's skirt from Robots of Death, that's just a few of them. Took lots of photographs, some of which we'll stick on our Facebook page. We would obviously recommend and encourage you to... There's a Sylvester McCoy cosplayer walking down the hill behind us, listeners. It's very distracting, but in a good way. Ace, I'm on the phone! So yeah, so be sure to check out the Facebook page to see the photographs that we took from the museum, but we'd encourage you definitely to visit yourself. It's fascinating, a really, really interesting range.
It's not what you'd expect in a little English village, is it?
Not really, no. And it's quite a small building that it's in, but they've done wonders with the arrangement and the placement and setting up of everything. It was fantastic. We had the Garm, which I hadn't seen since it was in the Paisley version of the Behind the Sofa exhibition in 1992, so that was quite nice. And they also have Mestor. They've got the actual Mestor. You could take a selfie with... Listeners, if you felt like it, you could take a selfie with Mestor. Can you think of anything else that should encourage you to visit Allendale? I can't.
But yeah, it's been fascinating to seeing it. What were my highlights? Seeing prop there, there was a costume from the Gil Gerard Buck Rogers in the 25th century, and there was also various bits and bobs, like bits of Cybermen here and there, Cyberheads. There's a few new series things, including a costume from Journey to the Centre of the TARDIS that one of those robot brothers wore.
Yeah, whatever the heck they were. Yeah, and there was also one of the Hath rifles from the Doctor's Daughter. I always feel that I'm the only person that likes that episode, but what can you do? Yeah, tons of stuff. Like, they even had the model train that was used to make Walford look futuristic in dimensions and time. I took a photograph of that. Of course I did.
And there's a few props in there, of course, that the guys have brought along with them today.
Yes.
There's a new Sea Devil from Legend of the Sea Devils, mm-hmm. plus an original one as well. Mike has brought along the new stunt canine prop, all made up for school reunion, with his side off, all ready to be repaired by David Tennant.
There's by Doctor Who.
Well,
by David Tennant, it was the 10th Doctor.
Okay,
it was
repaired by the 10th Doctor.
Yes.
And there's Ace's Ghetto Blaster, which, of course, we've now set to lock into only play the Power of Three podcast.
Ace's Ghetto Blaster from Silver Nemesis, etc. listeners. And do you know what? It's about half the size that I thought it was from watching that story, which just makes me think that Sylvester McCoy and Sophie Aldred must be very small indeed.
Yeah.
Think on that. But yeah, Stephen Mansfield has brought Fifi from the Happiness Patrol with him, so I took a selfie with Fifi. Selfie with Fifi, of course, was the B-side of a menswear. I'm on the wrong podcast, that's the jokes that I make elsewhere. Sorry.
That would be the Earth 2 podcast.
Earth 2 podcast. Kenny's going to be on that again soon, playing a character called Mr. Kenny in one issue of The Spectre coming out quite soon, but I can't remember if we've done it or not. Anyway.
I've just had a thought.
Have you? Dangerous.
I know. Dangerous, Dave. Do we only do podcasts with numbers in the titles? Earth 2, Power of 3, Pieces of 8.
I pop up occasionally on my friend Ross's Starman retrospective podcast, which is another DC comic, but that's called Opal City Confidential. And I've popped up once on Gallifrey's Most Wanted, so that's a couple that I appear on occasionally that don't have numbers in the
okay.
title.
But,
so but as far as you're concerned, yes.
Yeah, apart from the Big Finish podcast.
Multiples of 2, 3 and 8. If your podcast features those numbers and can be divided amongst them or something or nothing.
24, Kenny, that's the common denominator.
Kenny will
them.
Happily appear on your podcast. So there.
Yeah.
What were we talking about? Yes, so here we are. We're in Allendale. It's gorgeous. It's lovely. It's clouded over a bit now, but it's still lovely. It's very nice.
Yeah, and we are recording this chronologically, so we're going to be bringing you a few brief interviews before we head back up the road, and then we will bring you some chat at the end of the episode, which will be recorded as we make our way back to Scotland.
We certainly will. Yes, God, is this... No, it's not our first international... But this is good, though, isn't it? Saturday morning, randomly going to a Doctor Who convention halfway between Carlisle and Newcastle. Got to seize it, kids. You've got to live it. Life
exactly.
is, you know, get out there, do it. There's a man over there dressed up as Predator, which is pretty cool. Need to try and get a photograph with him. Anyway, let's see who Kenny manages to nail down for a chat.
Hello, I am Neil Cole. I am the Museum of Classic Sci-Fi creator and curator, and I've spent the last 30 years restoring Doctor Who props and costumes, particularly monsters.
Fantastic. So when did the idea for the museum first come around?
I started, the seed was sown, age 5, in 1975. I'd just seen Terror of the Zygons on the telly, and I went to Blackpool only twice, 75, 76, but I saw Broton in the flesh, and it was all that year's monsters. And it was, you know, a summer's day, not a summer's day, but it was a sunny day, and I was on the seafront, there was the TARDIS, and then you went downstairs. It was a talk, I remember the Dalek at the door telling you not to smoke, and you went downstairs, radiophonic music, coloured lights, and the actual monsters that you'd just seen on the telly, and with no other publications really at the time. It was surreal, and I remember I didn't even have a Target book then, and it was just all just seeing something I loved so much. I knew then, even then, I knew this was the real thing. So that was the seed persona. I always want to do it.
That's
from that
incredible.
Moment on. Yeah.
So what was the first prop that you got?
First prop I got, I was teaching. I don't want to say deprived, but it was a low-income background. So I couldn't afford even a lot of merchandise when I was a child. But once I started teaching in my late 20s, I remember seeing Ohika's gown. And I was going to work on a motorbike, because I used a motorbike for 10 years. And I sold my bike that weekend, and I bought Ohika's gown. And I then had to get public transport for about a year. but it was worth it. And I've still got Ohika's gown now.
I saw it
in
there.
The museum, and I think, no, that bike will have gone to bike heaven by now. But Ohika's gown, it's
on.
A perennial.
It's almost as if it's taken an elixir of life to preserve it.
Absolutely.
Keep it going.
Yeah.
Amazing. So then I'd imagine that, I suppose it's like being bitten by the bug with the Target books, Big Finish, the character options, action figures. Once you've got one, you want another, and you want another.
With prop collecting, I think it was interesting because I'm an action figure lover. Mm-hmm. I always, as a child, I was Star Wars. I was seven when Star Wars came out. So my Star Wars figures, but again, we didn't have a lot of money, but so it meant every figure I got, I was always trying to collect them, but I never could ever get a collection fully, but it was, everyone was special. And I had them, they were like these little, it was like a mini exhibition in my head then. Mm-hmm. It was like a rehearsal for what was coming. Once I remember seeing the Bonhams auction in 1990 on Blue Peter, and I was gutted because I had absolutely no money at all. And so I got the catalogue and I thought, well, that's that. But when I realised that they were coming, they were on the market, they were coming back, I then thought, right, I'm going to focus now. I kept collecting Harlequin miniatures, which I adore, DVDs, VHS, obviously, but then it was right, just props. And then I knew some of the sums of money for them were eye-watering. So I was realist. I thought, there's never... But I just started getting them, and I also started getting ones that needed repair. And because I can sculpt, it was like, I can repair this. And I had this sort of thing, this shouldn't be allowed to die, as it were. And that was a really... And that sort of... You get so involved in a piece when you're restoring it, you start to appreciate it, who made it, what techniques were involved, you know. And so that was the sort of drive there. Yeah.
That's amazing. One of the highlights, I have to say, was seeing a proper Zygon in there, Broton.
Yeah.
So you've been reunited with him after all these years.
That is the funniest thing. I've gone full circle. And my museum is very much a tribute to Blackpool exhibition. The new BBC exhibitions, they're very slick, very corporate, but and they're great, don't get me wrong. And the props are, I mean, the modern props are far more, they're made for higher scrutiny, if you know what I mean. Whereas the original props, they needed the coloured lights to keep them down. But Broton, Mike Tucker very kindly loaned me Broton. And he was, you know, he didn't like the fact it was lit at the Cardiff Experience in basically daylight, because it's not meant to be seen in daylight. And when you see it in the museum, he's delighted it's green and red. They are Zygon colours. And when you see that Zygon just outside the museum front door, it looks, you'd be, oh, it's not, it just doesn't quite have it. And as soon as you do that, the magic's there, you know. And it was, to get that in the museum, I never imagined. Yeah. And it is that costume. And it was the only piece I was scared of when I went in, because somebody was in it. And my dad wanted me to shake this hand, and I was five, remember, looking up at this bloody towering massive.
Yep.
And I could see there was someone inside, but it didn't matter. And I'd just seen on the telly as well. That was the magic of the Doctor Who exhibition.
Yeah.
It was just on the telly. And there wasn't all this merchandise. There wasn't all these options to view or see the programme. So it was in your head. Mm-hmm. It was quite powerful, I think. And I think that's the power of the old show, in a way. It's that heady brew of, you know, imaginings and... You know, it's a powerful thing. Yeah,
definitely is. I mean, we were so impressed when we went round, because we were obviously with the Doctor Who section, of course, being hidden behind the TARDIS.
Yeah,
which was a lovely surprise, and we're so impressed with the scope and the scale of what you have. The fact there's things from Marvel films.
Yeah,
there's a bit of Gil Gerard, Buck Rogers stuff. Brilliant, and just all these other.
Yeah.
Just a bit really for everyone, but Star Wars.
That the museum broadened, because I went to Llangollen, I went to Blackpool too. By this point I had a car, I got a car in my 30s, so I started to be able to go to Blackpool when it was re-put on. But the thing was, had it been totally up to me, I would have probably just done Doctor Who, because I always wanted to tell a chronological story of Doctor Who, and I wanted it chronological, and I wanted it researched, and I wanted the props explained, which the exhibitions rarely did, other than give you a little plot summary. And I mean, the thing is, we know that plot summary anyway, so I hate exhibitions where they go, this is a Zygon, it did this and that. Well, I know that. We all know that. Sorry, there's a hellish kid. A worse Doctor Who monster is going past us there. Anyway, so... The thing was, I knew, and I talked to Mike Tucker, there was no way the BBC would allow me to open a Doctor Who exhibition. So it had to be a science fiction exhibition. Well, that's okay, because I love science fiction. And then it was a question of really just so vast a subject, but I decided to call it classic, because it's really a classic Doctor Who exhibition, and I thought the sci-fi in my heart that I love is classic. So I class that as sort of pre-internet age, and I grew up reading Marvel Comics, the UK in the 70s, so I loved Marvel, and I think the first 10 years of the Marvel MCU is peerless almost. It's brilliant. So I thought that was a chance to get into that. And just very slowly, I don't actually know how I managed to get everything. I've had donations from people like Paul Anderson's sister-in-law delivered free gratis her chair from Event Horizon.
Wow.
You know? She's a primary teacher. I was a primary school teacher. We were chatting outside the museum. And then she said, what's that? That's my museum. And she went, oh, you've got a museum as well? I went, yeah. And she said, what is it, sci-fi? She went, oh, I've got a chair from Event Horizon, if you like it. My brother worked on the film. Who's your brother? Oh, Paul Anderson. I was like, okay, I love that. And then Graham Harper visited. And he very kindly donated the Cyber Leader helmet from Doomsday. And the other lovely donation was Margot Hayhoe, donated the Triffid, because she was production manager on that, and then I, on condition I restore it. And that's another reason, you know, people say, how do you manage to do this? It's because I do a lot of the work myself. So I did the building myself, I do all the internet, the publishing, I write the magazines, do all my design, sculpt. And that way, it's graft, really. What I can't do in sheer money, because I'm not a millionaire, I can make up for with determination.
Yeah.
Do you know what I mean? And I love it, I love it.
It's obvious. That absolutely comes across.
I love it.
When did the exhibition first open? And why Allendale of all places?
Allendale, I live here. Ba-boom. Simple as that. I needed a house to open the museum in. In my 40s, I was crestfallen, but I was actually about to sell off my collections. I thought, there's no way I'm going to afford a building. The building we got was, I'm not saying derelict, but it was getting on that way. No one had looked at it for years. It was on the market for years. And it was my wife, actually, managed to just get a quick sale on it. And my father-in-law helped greatly, just to quickly get an offer in. And we knew that, it's a four-story house, so we had floors for the kids and for their autistics. So they just need that bit of space, so it had that covered. My wife's a psychologist, psychotherapist, so she had a little space to do her work, and the whole ground floor. And I basically said, look, if I can have that ground floor, you'll not see a Dalek teapot or Target book anywhere in the house. It'll all be in there. And it was a chance to actually, and in it, it's technically the marketplace, so legally I could open it as a business, because it's quite hard. You've got to find a premises that you can actually open. You can't just do it in it. If you live in an estate, for example, you'll probably not be able to do it. So it was a challenge to do when you've, you know, but it all just came together. And it was 2017 we opened, the back end, with John Levine came, who was lovely, actually. John Levine was great, came around. And then we shut very quickly after for lockdown. But because it was the basement of the house, it meant that I just shut it and actually worked on the museum even more. It was a chance to actually make it better. So that was actually a useful time.
Yeah,
there you go.
Incredible.
We've had, in terms of numbers, we've had nearly 8,000 people through the museum, which for where we are, This is a, you know, an area of outstanding natural beauty, but it's also an out of the way area a bit, and it's lovely for this area to get. And the county council wanted more visitors, so I think we help definitely with that.
Yeah, I mean, we've been so impressed. I mean, say it was a 2-hour drive from Glasgow.
Yeah.
And same from Edinburgh as well.
Yeah.
And just so easy to get to, beautiful scenery and countryside.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
We're saying it's very all creatures great and small, or that sort of thing.
It's a hidden rural English. When people come and say, oh, look where it is, thinking, no, you'll have a nice time if you come. I always say, stay a weekend if you come anyway, stay a night in one of the B&Bs. And just because you're 20 minutes from the Roman Wall, the best bit of the Roman Wall is just up there. It's a dark sky area, so the stars are lovely at night. And basically, it's basically sort of nestled between the Lake District and the Roman Wall, both of which get all the tourists go to, and then we kind of have this nice bit of a lull. But it means it's, when you come here, it's not too, it's still beautiful, but it's just not as hectic and crazy. So it's, and, it's, and in terms of, sorry, your question about why Allendale, I'd been to Llangollen and I'd been to Brumyard. There's a little sci-fi museum in Brumyard as well. And I just thought, there's no real home of sci-fi, you know. You could argue where H.G. Wells lived, I guess. I don't know. But there's no, or the BBC television, you know, BBC Television Centre, I always think, you know, for Doctor Who, was like the home of Doctor Who. But you've just got to stick your flag in the ground and go for it, I think. So it was just, I knew Allendale in terms of, it was a nice place for people to visit once they're here. It's a chilled out place. You come in the summer, you can sit out and have a drink, a coffee or whatever outside in the marketplace. And it, I thought, I reckon we can do this. Do you know what I mean? Yeah. And it was a bit of a punt, but we went for it. You know?
It's amazing. Absolutely amazing. We've absolutely loved it. So tell us about today. Where did the idea for today as a convention coming about? Because
what
we particularly loved, Dave and I, saying that it feels like an old, it feels like a 90s convention,
yes,
where it's a lot more laid back,
yes,
chat to the guests,
yes,
get to know them,
yes,
and you're not having to fork out £100 for a photo, no, with somebody, well, and then another £100 for the autograph.
As I say, well, first of all, I've been to only one big convention in my life, and it was a queuing extravaganza, and I hate queuing. Simple as that. So that's number one. Number two, you can't get rid of this, but there's a them and us always between celebrity and an attendee. And I find that, personally, I find that awkward. And I just, having met a few people from Doctor Who now, with the museum, which I never expected, it was nice to sort of talk to them properly. And I thought, right, can we extend this somehow in our little village? Can we make this, you know, A, it's got to pay to cover, it's not profit this, it's just purely, I remember myself as a child never being able to, you know, this would have been a dream to come and see the real canine prop in my village hall in a little, in the country. So I just thought, right, if I can get people in, there's a few people in today I know who are on low incomes, have been able to come to this today. I said to the guests, I said, look, I don't want to charge. There's been Comic Cons on in Newcastle recently. You're looking at, you know, £150 to see one guest, up to £400-£500 for certain guests. And I'm thinking, right, this is not in today's world at the minute, with people's lives at the minute, you know, for a lot of people that's absolutely, it's becoming an elitist almost, and I thought, I'm not into that, and I never had, it would have just been out of the question for me. So I thought, I'm just trying to produce something that everyone, so I got the guests on board with that. And then in terms of where the idea came from, it was about, for this event, we'd had a couple of successful events before with Sophie Aldred, who was just a star. She's absolutely been brilliant, so supportive of what we do. Ian Levine was lovely. We also had Margot Hayhoe and Graham Harper. They were fabulous, lovely event last year. So we thought, okay, what can we do? I can't afford some of the big actors. So we thought, right, we're not even going to go there. Because to be honest, as nice as they are, I know the stories because I see it all the time in Doctor Who magazine or whatever. I don't want that now. The DVDs are brilliant, the Blu-rays are great. What I want is something different. And so what I tried to do is I thought, right, I love behind the scenes stuff. So I thought, the monster man, I love monsters. So this was like, I've always wanted Mike Tucker up because I've been one of my heroes, you know.
Yeah.
So can we get Mike up? I chatted to him on emails a few times and he visited last year. And I thought, can we get Mike? And then Robert Alsop had an incredible career behind him and in front of him. And then, and Stephen Mansfield, I think, revolutionized monsters really well, they all did. The little team of them, really, but you know, Stephen and Sue, they just did. I think the monsters in the Seventh Doctor era are just outstanding.
Completely agree.
Absolutely. And they raised the bar. And I thought, right, can we get this little unit together? And then Keith had simultaneously had the idea about the Monster Mound DVD about my restorations, which I'm very humbled about. It's lovely. Haven't seen it. God only knows what it's going to be like. It'll probably be like loads of copies under my bed till I die. But anyway,
I've got my copy here.
Oh, brilliant. Brilliant. That's good. But thank you. Thank you for buying it. There's one sold. Anyway, but I just thought at the end of the day, we'd tie the two in because I've restored several of Stephen's bits of work. So to have Stephen come up and look at them, and Mike Tucker was so pleased with what I did. He's not donated, he saw a lifetime loan kind of thing on a prop that you haven't seen yet, which is very special in the back of the car. And I've got the job of restoring it to go in the museum. And after this interview, I'll take you across and show you.
Oh.
But you can't tell anybody yet.
No, we'll keep it top secret.
Yeah. It's small, but fabulous.
Yeah.
And I nearly passed out this morning.
Wow. And the fact that Mike's given you that trust as well, given that what he's done for...
He did a lot of the restorations with the model unit for Cardiff for Olympia. And to me, he was always the bar I looked toward. You know, he's the guy who worked on the show, who knows the props intimately. And for his team, I mean, Broton, Mike actually sort of co-commissioned Colin Mapson to do Broton because Colin, uncredited, had worked on the Zygon costumes in 75. So he's the one who restored Broton. And that's really nice that the original, one of the original team did that. You know what I mean?
Wow.
So for him to say, you can do, I have a go at this, it's like, okay.
No pressure.
I just love doing it. I just want to get started on it.
Yeah.
Okay.
Well, thank you so much. Let's go and have a quick look.
Thank you. Let's do it.
And no, listeners, you're not finding out. Sorry. No. Bye.
Hi, well, it's Keith Barnfather from Real Time Pictures, and we're up here in Allendale for the Monster Men event to launch The Monster Man, our latest documentary about Neil Cole.
Which, fantastic subject, because I've just been chatting with him there, and I suppose it's one of those ones that's, it leaps out at you as being an obvious subject matter, because people A, like monsters, and B, they like to know the restoration and how they're done, these techniques.
Yeah, I mean, it's almost a no-brainer, but in fact that we weren't thinking of it originally. We'd done the lockdown links, which was when I met Neil the first time, and we'd done those a few years ago, and then we did a documentary about the museum. So to a degree, I sort of thought we'd done everything that we wanted to, and then I came up for another reason and came over and saw Neil. We were just sitting in the pub, surprisingly, and we were just chatting, and he was telling me about some of the monsters that he was working on and repairing at that time. He just had a donation. And when we did the museum documentary, we touched on the restoration work. And it, as you say, in a way, it's a no-brainer. But suddenly I thought, hang on, this is a subject we should cover. And that's what was the inspiration for the documentary, which to a degree was also the inspiration for the event today. It sort of led from that. And the lovely thing about today, even more so than the last one 18 months ago that Neil did, is this one has a really good theme. There is a point to it. It is to discuss monster making. All the people who are guests here are monster makers or creators, and you're getting a wonderful sort of holistic thing. The whole thing is looking at it from different angles.
I've been so impressed by the guests who are here, and of course you've worked with the majority of them, if not all of them, in the past as well.
Yeah, it's funny. Most of them, I wouldn't say all of them. I mean, Neil knew Mike Tucker well. Mike's been wonderful, a great supporter of the museum. But to a degree, I was saying, well, you should get so-and-so and so-and-so, because these people are really interested in their subjects and they would like to come, I think. And, you know, they've all been wonderful when Neil's approached them, Stephen Mansfield and Robert Alsop, to come as the sort of three main leads. There's loads of other people here who work in, you know, either fans or professionals who work in the business, but those are the three main leads in it, you know, sort of for the main discussion later on. So yeah, it's a nice feel, and they're lovely people. As you say, I've known most of them for nearly 40 years.
Don't say that.
I have to be honest. I mean, Real Time is 40 years old now.
Don't say that.
I'm sorry. And I organised the first Doctor Who convention in 1987. We'll be getting up for 50 years for that soon.
Don't say that.
Sorry. No, 1977. Sorry.
I'm 50 in June. Thank you very much.
Yeah, well,
I've
just hit pensionable age. But that doesn't, I honestly think it isn't about how old you are.
No.
It's about how sad you are.
Exactly.
And I'm very sad.
I like to match your sadness, or try and keep up your sadness.
Okay.
So tell us
more about it. It's difficult.
It is. It is. But particularly, you've got to work with dreadful people like Robert Dick. Bloody Scottish people.
Oh, I know.
Keep them in Scotland.
I know.
Don't let them into England.
I mean, the day you get your independence, the better, I think. And I don't mean that, everybody. I'm actually getting on a political subject for a second. I'm a great believer in the union, and I think it'd be crazy for us to split up. But I'm not making a political comment. It's just what I believe.
Absolutely. Which is good. We're all entitled to our opinions and expressed properly and with respect for others, the way that it should be, the way it used to be before social media ruined everything.
Now you're making a political
comment. Oh, yes, I am. Yes, I'm saying that social media.
Yeah, here he is about to do something on social media and he's complaining about it.
Let's talk about the DVD.
Okay.
Tell us pretty much what's in it and why should people buy it?
Well, I'm not very good at telling people why they should buy something. I like to think that if you make something that has quality, people will be drawn to it anyway. But from the point of view of what's in it, I came up and spent another pleasurable weekend with Neil in the pub. And a bit of the time we came and did some filming. And the idea was to sort of get his top 10 of all of the restorations that he's done. He shot loads of video over the years of everything that he's done. So he gave us all of his archive, and I interviewed him about bits and pieces of it. It's a fun documentary. It's not taking itself too seriously. And Roger Stevens, who did the editing, suggested doing a music track to package it for the opening titles and the closing titles. And he wrote some new lyrics, and Alistair Locke did a really fantastic rendition of it. And I think you have to see it to believe it. It works perfectly. It fits the tone. I've submitted it to about 11 film festivals because I'm so pleased with it. And we've already won 7 awards. So I know it's good. And it's interesting that we won Best Poster, because I do think that that inlay and that poster is brilliant. We won 3 Best Documentary awards so far, and we've also won 2 Sound Post-Production Awards, which of course is the music and the sound. So, yeah, what can I say? I mean, it speaks for itself.
And of course, this is all available and more from www.timetraveltv.com.
It is, isn't it, darling?
We've now been joined by a beautiful
lovely dog. Yes. Oh, hello. Sorry, locals, we know everybody here. I love Allendale, by the way. I mean, if I can do a bit of PR for Neil, you know, any of you who haven't been up to come up to Allendale to see the museum, if you possibly can, do. Because it is a wonderful village. It's a wonderful part of the world. It's where my roots come from, which is probably why I love it so much. But also, the museum is like, for youngsters who didn't get to see the original museums from Blackpool, Longleat and Llangollen, it's like stepping back in time. And what he's done with the museum is absolutely incredible. So if you can, come.
Mentioning those other exhibitions of the past, of course you do have some releases on those which have come out in recent times. Can you tell us a wee bit about those as well? Get a quick plug in for them too.
Well, since you insist, well, for many years I've had in the back burner of my brain of things to do was a documentary on, and it was always good because we do a lot of our titles are Doctor something, and I'd always had in the back of my mind Doctor on Display would be a brilliant title for a documentary about the museums. But when that actually came to fruition, probably a lot of it during lockdown, because I came up and did Museum of Classic Sci-Fi to use for the links for lockdown, it kicked off that thought process again, and we started Doctor on Display with a documentary about the museum here, and that led to us doing one on each of the classic museums, which has been a joy, an absolute joy to do, and to talk to fans about how much those museums meant to them. It surprised me how important it is to the generation of fans who grew up with Doctor Who when it wasn't anything other than on TV and the museums, before the days of social media, before the days of video. The museums were the only other way of really, until conventions came along, people being able to connect with the programme, and they meant a lot, the pilgrimages to Blackpool and to Longleat. Yeah.
So there we go. And again, they're also available from www.timetraveltv.com.
Well, you could say that. I couldn't possibly comment.
Keith, thank you so much for joining us again.
Always
in the Power
a pleasure.
Of
Always a pleasure.
Hi, I'm Stuart Pringle. I am a writer of a bunch of things, including quite a lot of stories for Big Finish, often with my wife, Lauren Mooney, and I'm born and bred in Allendale, which is where we're sitting right now.
It's just this. I just couldn't believe it. And the fact that we're in the museum, you recognise my voice, which is the weirdest thing. I've never been recognised by my voice before, which I'll take as a compliment. Thank you, Stuart. And it's great to actually meet in person.
Yeah.
We've had Zoom calls and emails, but
we have.
Never proper.
Over many years now. And I didn't know anyone who was coming to this that I knew was coming. And I sort of, I'm up in the village to visit my family and doing some work up north next week. So I thought, well, great, there's a Doctor Who convention on, I've got to go to that. And then walking through the museum, I said, I know that voice. Those dulcet tones I heard many a time. So yeah, what a treat. And it's been an amazing day.
Yeah. So you've obviously, as an Allendale native, it must be quite bizarre for you, considering you were saying that this is the village hall where you got married, what, a couple of years ago?
Yeah, 2 years ago, yeah. We got married in my parents' back garden, which is just up the road, and then we had our reception in a Cayley in this village hall, and now it's full of Daleks and Davros and all sorts of things, which is great. I mean, like, when I was a kid, you know, I've watched Doctor Who since I was, as long as I can remember. Some of my very first memories are watching, you know, early Sylvester McCoy. And when I was a kid, there was always rumours that there was someone in the village who'd made spaceships for Doctor Who, and I was always trying to find out who it was and ask my grandma, and she can never remember. But like, you know, this is in the early 90s and stuff, when there wasn't very much Doctor Who stuff really compared to now. And so the idea then that there would be the best Doctor Who museum I've ever been to in this village, and a convention full of these, you know, amazing luminaries and Daleks wandering around and Davros and everything, is just out of this world, really.
Yeah. I mean, the thing that is we're just amazed by how lovely it is. This the whole atmosphere. It's a small scale event compared with some of the. Not, I mean, obviously people do like the bigger scale LFCCs and the big Comic Cons, but this is like going back to basics with Doctor Who conventions with what I used to go to.
Right. Yeah. Yeah. It's just having a chat with everyone, and you know, there's a film screening in a bit, but it's been great. Just getting a proper chance for people to have long conversations with these amazing people who've been working on the show and other stuff for years and years. I think it's got a really nice vibe. Neil's got a great thing going here, I think.
Yeah, I mean, Dave and I were earlier just saying how fantastic it is to see all these amazing props. But for you, it must be especially bizarre thinking you watched these things, you saw Hemivores on TV.
Yeah.
And here they are, literally in your hometown.
They've got here. They've snuck in. I know, I did. I said that to him. I was like, those Hemivores scared the living hell out of us when we were kids. Like, I remember, you know, talking to friends about it and stuff and being utterly terrified of Curse of Fenric and absolutely thrilled by the Candyman and Fifi and all of that. And now they've come to the village hall. It's the weirdest thing. Yeah, it's totally surreal. And now it's kind of what Allendale's mainly known for. It's got this amazing Doctor Who exhibition and Daleks. I think it's just a thrill.
Yeah, and long may it continue that people will come here, because I'd heard of the museum, but never obviously been. So it's
absolutely
quite incredible. And as we're chatting, the son of Ian White, the original The Mountain from Game of Thrones, is playing basketball, and he's absolutely massive, just like his dad.
He is, absolutely. And seems pretty good.
Yes, we're watching. That's the background sound you can probably hear.
In Allendale Play Park, where, you know, I spent a lot of time on the swings in my childhood.
And, of course, over to our left is the greatest thing in the world
ever. They installed there's a slide. You can't see it because this is audio, but believe me, it's a beauty. And, when they installed it in about 1992, it was just incredible and still there today, looking a little bit worse for wear, aren't we all? But it's lovely to be here, and how wonderful to be here with all these Doctor Who folk.
Fantastic. Stuart, thank you.
Thanks, Kenny.
So there we go, guys. That was the interviews we've managed today. So we've just heard there from Neil Cole, Keith Barnfather, and Stuart Pringle. So, yeah, I've had an amazing day. We're now sitting after the event. It's just finished. What time is it, Dave?
It's about 20 to 6 or something like that.
Yep, 5:41 p.m. on Saturday, the somethingth of April.
Yep. 20th. Listen, folks, honestly, what a brilliant day, what a lovely day, you cannot fault it. We obviously, after our intro, we got a showing of Keith's documentary about Neil's work, and that was really, really interesting, just seeing everything that Neil's done, just to preserve these sort of Doctor Who costumes and, you know, other things too. There's some, you know, at the museum, there's some stuff from some of the Marvel movies and some stuff from Buck Rogers, of all things.
Yep.
But just a really lovely day, a really informal, relaxed atmosphere for the, you know, the signings and sort of meet and greet. Managed to have a lovely chat with Stephen Mansfield. We got to speak to Glenn McCoy and Stephen Gallagher. A really, really nice atmosphere. That was the best thing about it. And just such a lovely place to come to for it. It was, listeners, I would encourage you to consider coming to another one of these events if there was one to be put on. Met a few new folk, got chatting to folk, did my usual of absolutely regressing to 15-year-old me. And it was and it was great. I quite like being 15-year-old me. So it was nice to be able to talk to people like Robert Alsop and Mike Tucker and Stephen Mansfield and sort of say, look, you know, I'm a McCoy kid. I love the stuff that you were doing. You know, getting some details from Stephen about working on Delta and the Bannermen, which is my favourite Doctor Who story, and Robert giving me some details on how he made the Candyman. And also, you know, talking to Mike, giving us some fantastic scurrilous gossip, which we couldn't possibly repeat.
No.
Maybe if he'll come on again, he'll be able to tell us. I don't know.
Sure, you've got to share the Delta and the Bannermen story, because I've never heard that before.
No, I'm not going to tell it. In case Stephen comes on himself, because we have asked him if he'd like to come on and kind of talk to us and stuff.
They have, everybody we asked to come on has said yes, so we've got contact details
hopefully we'll get a few folk on and we can ask Stephen to tell us the Delta story that he told me.
Yep.
But it'll probably be torturous in the lead up to it, so apologise in advance, but it was very, very funny. It was just it concerned the baby shimmer on, put it that way.
But the thing that I've really enjoyed today is this is an old school Doctor Who convention.
Yes.
This is not an event where you pay 15 quid to get in and then you have to pay for every subsequent photo and every subsequent autograph.
Yes.
Everything was included in the price. If you wanted to take pictures, you got your pics.
Yep.
You wanted your autographs, you got them as part of your admission. Wonderful.
Yep. And The special effects guys brought some stuff along, so photographs with Fifi from Happiness Patrol, the new Sea Devil from Jodie's Sea Devil episode. Mike brought K9 and Ace's Ghetto Blaster. Ace's Ghetto Blaster was tiny. I was stunned. K9's huge. I was stunned. I mean, there was an interview panel with the three lads up on stage, which was actually genuinely very interesting. Some of these panels can be a little bit stilted. Sometimes you think you've heard it all before, but it wasn't. It was really, really good. And nice to see them being honest and talking about their experiences working on the show. It was great.
And what was great was there were new anecdotes for me, and I thought I knew most of the classic series anecdotes that you were going to hear. And I know, like, Mike Tucker, I'm quite friendly with, it's fair to say. And just to hear these new anecdotes, I think maybe perhaps because we're now further away, people can talk a bit more freely about things back in the day. Particularly just interesting what they're talking about JNT.
Yeah.
And that was fascinating.
But they were talking about it
in a positive way.
Absolutely. They were not being negative about it. They weren't being negative about him at all. They were being very sort of positive about the whole working environment that he gave them. He allowed them to operate in, which was refreshing, because quite often J&T gets a bad press. So it was nice for them to be positive. And positive is the word I would give for the whole day. It's been lovely. It's been a great day, a great adventure.
Yep.
And everything, and it's not going to take us to get, won't take us as long to get home as Novel Experiences
did.
Another mention of Novel Experiences there. Take a drink, listeners, anytime we don't mention Novel Experiences at the end of an episode. Yeah, we're going to leave almost immediately. And obviously in the show notes, etc., and on the socials, we'll post a few more photographs from our day, so you can have a look and see what was going on and all that, and everything. And yeah,
plenty of social media to find. You can find, I think it's classicscifimuseum.co.uk, maybe classicscifimuseum.com, but have a Google, you'll find it. The link will be in the show notes.
Absolutely.
As well.
And try and
find it on Facebook as well.
Yeah, and try and get along and visit it, listen, because it's very worth your time. It's a really fascinating collection. I saw some brilliant stuff that I was really, really impressed at. You know, the Black Cyberman that is down in the sewers on Attack of the Cybermen, you know, the Cyber Scout, they've got that, it's great. They've got a Shimmeron, it's great. They've got Urak's, what's left of Urak's head from Time and the Rani, it's terrific. They've got one of the original Pteroleptils. There's a lot of really, really interesting stuff. Some stuff I had seen in the past, but most of it I hadn't. So, you know, it's a nice day out, put it that way.
Particularly when you've got weather like this, where we've
absolutely
actually got sunshine, and you can no doubt hear the birds on social media at the moment. Sorry, they're going Twitter,
yes.
So they're not Xing now.
That was a pun there, listeners, did you catch that? Right, we're going to go, because I want my tea.
Yes, but Dave, before we go.
Yes, well, obviously, today's theme has been the Monster Men, so obviously we're going to play it with that wonderful, rousing 2000s era indie tune that turned up in Torchwood that one time. It's The Automatic with Monster. Bye, folks. We'll see you soon.
Bye bye.